everybody, and welcome to the extended free preview of this month's episode of What a Cartoon Movie, all about Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. I am one of your hosts, the quite humorous and jocular Bob Mackey, who is here with me today, as always.
Boing, it's Henry Gilbert, hey.
Yes, that is the classic Beavis sound effect, and this month we looked at one of our newest subjects ever, Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. It just came out in June 2022 on Paramount Plus. We love it. We love the Beavis and Butthead reboot, and we sat down to talk about this hilarious movie that you should all be into and watching right now. Well, not right now, but as soon as you can. It's very, very funny.
It was so much fun to talk about Beavis and Butthead, their big return movie, and how like great it is. And it was like the just getting back on a bike. And, you know, we also had, if you haven't listened to them yet, check out our two interviews on the Talking Simpsons feed, one with Susie Dieter and one with Lou Morton, both who worked on this film. And we learned a ton. And Bob did a ton extra research on it, and we even had an anonymous source helping us with it.
A deep throat, if you will. I think Beavis and Butthead would chuckle at that. And as an added
throat.
I did say throat. And as an added bonus, this podcast could be the one of the only you've heard where one of the hosts had COVID but didn't know it.
Oh, yes, that's also true.
I was like, why am I so hot and sweaty? And then 2 days later, uh-oh. So, yes, if you want to hear what that sounds like, well, it's only happening at the Talking Simpsons Network at patreon.com/Talking Simpsons. Sign up at the $10 level. You can hear the rest of this podcast as well as everything on the $5 level. That includes all of our miniseries we've recorded to date so far, episodes about Batman the Animated Series, episodes about Mission Hill, The Critic, and then you get monthly access to both Talking Futurama and Talking of the Hill, new episodes every month, and that's all happening at the $5 level. But when you sign for $10, you get all that plus all access to everything on the What a Cartoon Movie level. We've done so many things. Henry, what have we talked about in the past? I know there's another Beavis and Butthead movie we talked about.
That's right. If you want to hear the companion to this, this is a sequel to Beavis and Butthead Do America. That was a whole lot of fun. We've also covered films like Akira, A Goofy Movie, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, Shrek, so many things, a big diverse group of them. And we did this one as well because it was the opposite of what we did all summer, which was the summer of the Disney Renaissance 2, where we covered The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Rescue Is Down Under, and those are a ton of fun to listen to as well. So please, if you haven't yet, you have over 250 hours of What a Cartoon Movies at your fingertips with a brand new one each month at the $10 level at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
That's all for a little intro today, but please enjoy us laughing like dumbasses at our favorite dumbasses as we explore Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Where did we leave off with our history in 2011? Well, that's the 8th season of Beavis and Butthead. It comes to a close at the very end of 2011, I think like December 29th. Despite very strong ratings for a basic cable show running during prime time, MTV cancels it. So some quick facts for you. So by the end of the season, Beavis and Butthead was basically pulling in Rick and Morty style numbers.
Whoa.
A few years before Rick and Morty was the basic cable darling of like adult comedy.
So it wasn't just like, you know, oh, this old thing came back and nobody cared. It was actually a hit and people were into it.
Yeah, yeah. Like the first episode got like a little over 3 million viewers, which is very good. And by the end, it was like a little under 1 million, but still very good for, again, a cable show running in prime time on a Friday night.
Yeah, like MTV, which, you know, is not what MTV used to be as far as rating goes, and mostly MTV just shows the same like four shows in giant blocks every single day.
That's what I was gonna say. So basically MTV pulled a small scale version of what HBO Max is doing now. They're like, oh, animation is expensive, especially stuff we have to outsource. Why don't we just fill our programming block with reality TV crap and documentaries? And that's exactly what they did, which is why their entire schedule now is Ridiculousness and Catfish marathons. Stuff you don't have to pay anyone residuals for, and the people on there you have to pay barely anything.
Man, it is a recipe for profitability, if not artistic quality, that's for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, compared to those reality shows, Beavis and Butthead wasn't cheap. I mean, there was maybe 15 minutes of animation per episode, but it was also done by Film Roman and sent overseas. And it was always a good-looking show. I mean, despite how the characters look, they're very particular in terms of how you draw them, and there's a way you have to make them look correct, which is why the top studios handled them. Like, after the beginning of Beavis and Butthead in 93, there was a really rough start, and then Rough Draft took over when it was a fairly new studio and made the show look really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and compare that to what, say, a William Street production on Adult Swim is probably pretty far apart in price, even for, you know, Beavis and Butthead is not as fully featured as King of the Hill. I would guess it costs a little less than an episode of King of the Hill for the same amount of time on screen. But still, it's not using Flash materials either. Like back then, it was digital animation, but full animation. Yeah.
Except for the couch segments, when it was basically the Space Ghost technology at work.
That's true, yeah. But it's been that way since the beginning.
Yes.
So,
and I love those drawings so much. Mm. So this is also the first Beavis and Butthead thing we've done since Paramount Plus launched.
Yeah.
Here's my rant. It sucks. I hate Paramount Plus so much. I will pay an extra dollar to get rid of those pre-roll ads. I don't need your production studio's logo that's unskippable. Mm-hmm. I know who made the thing I'm about to watch, okay? it's a first world problem, but when I'm paying for no ads, my blood boils when I have to sit through an unskippable 5-second ad that needs to load.
Mm-hmm. Oh god, the loading is the worst thing on Paramount Plus. Like I've multiple times I've had it load like the audio for an episode of something, and then I have to like leave the video and then go back to it start over again with video and audio.
God help us, it's so bad.
Yeah. Well, and on Beavis and Butthead, unfortunately, it's both MTV Studios and Comedy Central, even though it didn't air on either of those, because then Paramount decided this won't air on Comedy Central. This has to be a Paramount Plus exclusive to make people sign up for it.
That's very strange.
Yeah. When I opened up Paramount Plus 2 recently, it just said, hey, you want to give us $3 more a month and you get Showtime? I was like, no.
Oh, they're doing that now?
They are doing
that.
How
about no time?
Yeah.
In June, early June, it was reported that all of the episodes of Beavis and Butthead are coming back with videos. And I think they pulled that back a little, saying they'll roll out in stages. Mm-hmm. And as of now, what's on Paramount Plus is extremely anemic as of this recording on the last day of August in 2022.
Yeah.
Because Paramount Plus launched with all of the Mike Judge collection basically uploaded. And now there's like a very scant amount of episodes per season, but they skip entire seasons. So there's like maybe like with videos, 15% of the shows represented, maybe less than that. Mm-hmm. So I'm still waiting for them to fulfill their promise that was widely reported in June of 2022.
Yeah, it made me feel like a jerk because I had just said, oh, well, they reported it, so it must be true. I didn't check until after somebody on a comment, I think, said, hey, is it in your territory that you can see every episode? And that's when I learned, like, ah, shit, Paramount Plus made me a liar. I think you said they don't even have all the 2011 episodes?
No, I was going to say that next.
Sorry, yes. Sorry.
They only have two segments from the 2011 run, which means that's like one episode's worth of content out of like 12 or 13.
What the
which
hell?
Means I wanted to rewatch these, but guess what? Only two segments. So I'm watching the ones I pirated in 2011.
Wow.
That's the only way you can watch them is if you can find a way to pirate them, or if you did 11 years ago like me.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's the downside so much for streaming right now. Like, I think our pal Thad reminded me of this in the comments. He's like, don't think of these digital streamers as access to the entire catalog all of the time. They are like old cable channels in that sometimes a reruns of a series stop and they don't have a series anymore. I think Disney Plus changed everything that mentally we all think, because Disney Plus gave us all the Disney vault at once, that once HBO Max or Paramount Plus starts, you're like, okay, where's everything? I'm paying you $10 a month for everything.
This is one of the few times I will praise Disney and their business practices, where Disney Plus is a very good deal. They're not like, we don't want to clear all these Simpsons songs, so here's a selection of Simpsons episodes. No, they are all there, and they could be stingy like that. I mean, we're doing season 13 of The Simpsons now, and there's like 5 licensed songs in every episode.
Yeah, it's probably costing them money, honestly, to host Bonkers at some point, because who's watching Bonkers?
Yes.
But I'm glad it's there. And I fear, you know, what happens if they take away Bonkers like they did all the shit on HBO Max, you know?
Don't take away Bonkers. The kids of the future need to know about him. So let's go over the history of the reboot. Where does it begin? Well, let's go back to truly one of the worst times to be alive in recent history, July of 2020. Rotten armpit of a month.
Yeah.
Mid-pandemic. The dream of a Memorial Day without COVID had passed.
Yes, yeah. It's like,
and we gave up on a 4th of July without COVID. We're like, nah, it's not going to happen. And people were like, come on, guys, Halloween. We got to get this together for Halloween.
Mask on to move on.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and it's just, no, it's not happening. Or you just live in the parts of the country where they're like, no, we're just doing whatever we feel
like.
Yes,
exactly. Some places that never change after like a few weeks.
Yeah, but here, locked down and careful and feeling a lot of guilt.
Some people couldn't see their wives for 9 months. Mm-hmm. I pity them. on that day, some light was brought to our lives because Variety announced the upcoming reboot. And the quote from Variety is, Comedy Central announced Wednesday the world's favorite slacker teens are getting a reimagining at the cable network courtesy of original series creator Mike Judge. Comedy Central has ordered 2 seasons of the show as part of a new animation deal with Judge and 3Arts Entertainment. The deal also includes potential spinoffs and specials. So that did not mention a movie, but a potential special, which we learned from the Lou Morton interview. This movie started as a 30-minute special.
Right, which shows you just how much like it just grew naturally. Like, and I'm glad that the plot of this, if they tried to squeeze it into 30 minutes, it'd do a real disservice to it.
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
But that 2 seasons thing sounds like the current, you know, streamer cheat on animation where they just okay, a 26-episode order, and then they say that to the world, they say, hey, season 2 of Cuphead's out.
It's got like, renewed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we learned from Lou Morton it's going to be 24 episodes in 2 seasons.
Yeah,
In this Variety article, it helped me solve a mystery because the end of this 2-year-old article announces that, okay, remember this, the Daria spinoff, Jody?
Right, yes.
It announces that we'll be moving from MTV to Comedy Central. And I was like, oh, right, Jody. We talked about that when we covered Daria in 2018, when that project was announced.
That's right, when we were like in person in the old Retronauts recording vault.
Yes,
yeah.
It was a very long time ago, and I saw a mention of that in a 2020 article. I'm like, what happened to that project? It's gone through a lot of changes. And then I saw an article posted in late May by Variety. This Jody thing was re-announced as an animated film for Paramount Plus.
Oh, okay.
So it went from MTV to Comedy Central to Paramount Plus, and it went from being a Daria and Jody live action series to a Jody live action series to a Jody animated movie.
Man, oh, that's so needlessly complicated. This would leave Beavis and Butthead going like, what?
Yes.
But yeah, I guess in general that shows that Viacom doesn't know what it wants with all its cable channels over like the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, this is my Jody commentary. I think their hearts are in the right places, but Jody was not the character people tuned into Daria to watch, and she had some good moments, but I say let's get more characters back.
Yeah, I think, or they're going to really need to change the character of Jody to make her like somebody who can carry a whole show.
Yeah, I feel like it's just going to be about a black woman named Jody and will have nothing to do with Daria, and that's fine.
Yeah.
It feels like a very strange thing to pick from a really beloved show.
I mean, if that's what it takes to get Paramount to commit to an animated series with a black female lead,
hey,
they have to go like, well, can it be connected to a thing from the 90s? Then I guess that's how it's got to be done.
But, I don't want to take it away from anyone. I'm not saying this ruins Daria, but I do want to see Daria come back.
Yeah, it also feels like that MTV like 5 years ago said, you know, hey, we do want spinoffs, and then they decided, no, actually, we don't want to rebirth anything because we want to just appeal to the young, and we don't want stuff that appeals to people in their late 30s.
Aww.
So then Comedy Central then said, well, we'll take it. We can reboot the stuff. We're all in the same company. And then like halfway through Comedy Central making these things, Paramount Plus comes around. They say, no, everything has to be on Paramount Plus. This is where this is going.
Even South Park, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. That's where the South Park movies, I mean, their specials, this movie is more of a movie than the South Park movies.
It was a real bait and switch. I watched one of them. Now, by the end, I was like, oh, it's an episode.
Yeah, it's
that
just
continues into another episode.
Yeah, it's basically like a less edited episode.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, what if this episode was 40 minutes? And I'll admit, I haven't watched the Streaming Wars ones. The post-COVID one was all right. It was all right. It also was about future jokes, just like this one.
Yeah, it really. Yeah, a lot of shows are doing this in their reboots. I mean, South Park never need to be rebooted because it's been going on forever. But Rocco's Modern Life has a very Future Shock. Is it called Future Shock?
I think it Static? Is. No, Static Shock. Or
whatever.
You should just look it up. I'll look it up.
Henry's looking it up while you get angry at us at home. But yeah, that has a very similar premise in which characters from a thing you like are brought to the future. At that point, it was 2019. In this case, it's 2022.
Static Cling.
Static Cling. Thank you. Thank you.
And basically, and that happens in this movie too, but they always make me laugh. What happens when a character from the 90s sees a cell phone? What do they do? What happens?
What if Beavis have cell phones?
Yes. Yeah. What happens?
And it's very funny, it turns out.
Yes. Very funny.
So how did this reboot take form? Thankfully, there's a really good New York Times profile on Mike Judge. And I also read like every interview he did around this time because he did like 10 interviews and they're all really good.
I got to give it to the New Yorker, especially because they took one interview with him and I think they turned it into three pieces. Like they're like, more thoughts with him on just satire. Like,
hey, you got to get people to read these articles. It's really hard. So an important context here for Judge is that like he really wanted to stop doing Beavis and Butthead. He was incredibly burned out. He was moving on to King of the Hill. MTV just had an endless hunger for more episodes and they were just doing too much. It's why it really was a 4-year show. Barely 4 years. It was like 3 years and 10 months with a movie in that in that span of time as well.
Right. Yeah. It burned very bright and that's MTV in 96. They're like, no, can we squeeze another dollar out of this? Yeah. We need this, man. Yeah.
And Judge was really burnt out. He was like, I want to direct a movie. I'm on King of the Hill now. But as time passed, he was like, you know what? I like Beavis and Butthead. And now he says on the record, it's my favorite thing I've ever done. Like, he loves Beavis and Butthead. And but at that time, he was a little burnt out on it. But by the early 2000s, he was like, all right, let's figure out Beavis and Butthead again. So there was going to be a reboot even before the 2011 reboot. And he wanted to make a sequel to Do America. And in this New Yorker profile, he talks about a few premises. So one premise was slightly similar to this one in that the first act took place at a space camp. So parts of this movie are remnants of like an existing idea Judge had in the early aughts for a Do America sequel.
Okay. I mean, Beavis and Butthead fucking around at a space camp and then going to outer space. That's a funny concept that feels big enough to be the beginning of a movie.
Yeah.
Not an entire movie. But
and
yeah.
I don't think time travel is part of it, although he didn't say very much about it. Now, I'll preface this by saying, Judge says, I'm very thankful I didn't make this movie. So here is the premise for the other movie. Someone tries to recruit Beavis and Butthead for a suicide mission with the promise of 72 virgins. Sorry, virgins.
Oh, boy.
I wrote virgins. Virgins. So, yes, guess what, guys? Post 9/11 humor.
I get it. Hey, in 2003, it would have totally fit. Every show had to do that. Yes.
Yeah. And again, Judge is like, I'm really happy we didn't do that. And it does bring me back to that zone of humor, which I don't like very much.
No. I mean, the South Park Durka style of humor, I suppose. Yeah.
And I was like, I was dabbling in like atheism literature and all the snarky things. Like, it actually means 72 raisins, and they're too stupid to know that.
Wow.
Read the Quran.
Wow, man.
I wasn't saying this, but people were saying this online.
I didn't know that back then.
I don't think that's true, but this is what online atheists were saying.
Good old online atheists, man. No, I mean, I guess in general, it's a nice thing that Beavis and Butthead missed the entire W administration. Like, I guess the timeline bears it out even here. Beavis and Butthead work in a Democratic presidency. Like all three of these eras of Beavis and Butthead are under a Democrat president.
That's true. I'm always going to vote Democrat now. It's funny you mentioned that because people bring up the fire thing a lot with Judge because there's an episode in the new reboot that's very funny where Beavis has like a friendship with fire and it's a good influence on him. And he says in these interviews, like, you don't know how scary people thought this was. And then he points out, we were at a time of, like, unmatched comfort and peace. And people needed to find things to be afraid of. And for about a few months, it was Beavis and Butthead.
Man, that's a really good point. Yeah, I think people were very, very afraid that this effed up looking blonde kid saying fire and being interested in looking at flames would convince thousands of children to light their like sister on fire or whatever. And it's just it's very very dark and sad. I mean, and you know, they, it sounded like they were lying ambulance stations. But Lou had such a funny reply to that in our interview.
Yeah, and it's funny where he points out, like, he understood why people didn't like the show. He thought the early episodes weren't very good. Mm-hmm. And Judge points out, in the beginning, all Beavis and Butthead were just monsters behaving terribly to everyone. And he thought, we have to make 100 of these. We need to do something more. And part of that was to get you to pity them. Mm. So you had to actually feel sorry for the characters to want to watch them. You couldn't just watch them like abuse animals or cause property damage or burn things down, which is what the first like 30 episodes are of this show. They're not very fun to watch. It's just like nihilism.
Yeah, yeah. That's why context-free, if you see something like Frog Baseball, you know, it just seems like it does make the show look like horrific. Like just, oh, this is a bad show that makes kids be bad. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, I like how he explains what's like there needed to be something more. We started writing the characters a little better.
That was Judge's mistake at first of like, well, yeah, this is, I'm just going to show people how awful a 14-year-old boy is. And the world wasn't ready for that kind of unvarnished truth about a 14-year-old American boy.
And he says in these interviews, like 14-year-old boys don't change. And that's why Beavis and Butthead are timeless. It's just like they're basically the same throughout time.
That's true. Yeah,
and that's why we love seeing these guys whenever they come back. So let's skip to the late teens, the 20 teens, that is. So Silicon Valley coming to an end. Judge was developing something that didn't quite come into being. He didn't say what it was, but around the same time he was back to dabbling in the realm of Beavis and Butthead, because he put together an intro for the band called Portugal the Man. Mm. And they showed this on their tour. Now, I did not know what this band was, but I had heard this song. So in this intro that Judge made unsolicited, he's just like, I like this band. I want to make a Beavis and Butthead thing for them. And they would show this intro on their tour. And the intro is Beavis and Butthead watching one of their videos. And based on the response to this intro, he decided, let's do Beavis and Butthead again. People love seeing them, and it still works.
Wow, so we have Portugal the Man to thank for inspiring Judge once more. Man,
in case you're wondering, like, what the Portugal the Man? What is this? Well, here's a clip of them watching the video, and you've heard this song. I don't even think I can pick out a lyric, but here it is.
Portugal.
The Man.
Whoa, is that a crime scene?
This whole video is a crime scene.
There you go. So, yeah, I've heard the song like at like a mall or something, or getting my hair cut, but I'm like, I can't pick out one lyric.
I definitely feel like I've heard it walking around an amusement park too. Like it has not a Disney, because they very keep their stuff very on lock about the Disney stuff, but it sounds like Universal Studios to me, like just walking around, like you'd hear Happy, I'm so happy, and then you go straight into like, I'm a rebel just for kicks, man.
Oh, that's what he's saying? Okay.
I know that because I've heard other people like sing it as a joke on a podcast.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that is like the Happy of the post-Trump era, I guess, song. And Judge, you know, former musician, he wrote the theme to Beavis and Butthead, and he likes some modern music. He liked them a lot. In fact, he likes BTS, which is why they watch BTS on Beavis and Butthead, and that's why Beavis is a BTS fan in that one video segment where he's like, I kind of like it.
That's great. Yeah. I didn't know that's why. I thought it was just a joke that Beavis would like BTS, but he actually does. Mm-hmm. Boy, Mike Judge, years older than us, he is doing better at staying current with music than we are.
Yeah, he'll be 60 this year.
Ooh, wow.
So that's how old he is. So Judge had not done the voices in years when he made this video, probably like 7 or 8 years. But he was thrilled to find like, oh, I can just do this again. And it's effortless. Like, I'm still good at doing these voices. So there was nothing on his plate. Judge was a very busy man until this point. I think maybe his like Outlaw Country show had ended as well.
Oh, yeah.
That was like a Showtime thing, I think.
I think so. Yeah. Which I guess is still in the Paramount family.
Yeah. So nothing was on his plate. And Judge pitched a potential Beavis and Butthead movie. But the bigwigs are like, okay, we want a series too. So the story of the making of this is Judge said, can I make a movie? And they're like, yes, make a series as well. And that's how it happened.
I guess that's the permission to do that. But yeah, I mean, you know, that I suppose weekly installments of a series, that is more what a streamer wants than just a one-off movie. Because once you've watched the movie, well, then you end your subscription, don't you? Like, meanwhile, if it's a series, you'll stick around.
Yes, yeah. And they are doing the weekly rollouts, and I love it. We're back to how TV should be, damn it.
Netflix is the only one who hasn't got the memo yet about it. They're still doing big drops.
Something to look forward to, and not just a glut of content staring you down and daring you to watch it.
I'm so peeved they're still doing it. They're about to do another... like, I think 13 episode drop of the next season of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And I'm just like, please, just drop it out one by one, especially for a show like that that is built on cliffhangers. I kind of want a cliffhanger.
Get a comfy chair, get a catheter.
Yeah, I know.
And an IV, and get ready. So, he's pitching a movie to Paramount. The dark twist to this is, and we heard this in our Lou Morton interview, it comes up in Judge's interviews as well, this movie was going to be a live-action Beavis and Butthead movie.
Wow.
I don't want to see it. And apparently Judge says the door has not closed on that idea. Hmm. So Paramount really pushing for that idea, I think because animation is more expensive than hiring unknown teenagers to play Beavis and Butthead.
I guess so, and more commercial. I mean... there's a little tease at the very start of this of like, okay, if Beavis and Butthead were in CG, what do they look like?
Right, three-dimensional things.
But they have to be the flat, ugly drawings for it to feel like real Beavis and Butthead to me. Like, as a one-off gag or whatever, that's fine to see a three-dimensional Beavis and Butthead. But also, like, unless they cover a person's face with a ton of prosthetics, they can't actually be a human playing Beavis and Butthead.
It's going to look like those hideous Halloween masks from the 90s of Beavis and Butthead.
Those are great.
So, yeah, Paramount really wants it to be live action. And at first, the premise seemed to be Beavis and Butthead starting in cartoon form, then getting sucked into our world, which feels like how the movie is now. You can see how the initial outline was. They go to the space camp, and then the black hole takes them to not just 2022, but our world in 2022.
Yeah, no, I could totally see. It makes so much sense that they would appear in our world that way. And most of the jokes of them interacting with 2022 would probably be about the same. It would just be in live action. But that also just feels like how... executives think that they're like, well, we're certainly not going to release a 2D film in theaters. Like, that's not going to be a prestige movie.
It didn't work for Bob's Burgers, but that's because I think they made it too late.
Yeah, they made it way too late. And also they, you know, it doesn't, I'll watch it eventually. I'm sure I will. But yeah, it also sounded like, it didn't sound big enough to be a movie either. Like, just sound like a big episode of TV.
And there's a lot of Bob's Burgers out there.
Yes.
Yeah. So, at first it seemed to be the premise was going to be Beavis and Butthead cartoons go to the live action world. And then it changed into a purely live action feature to the point where they actually had a casting call for teenage boys to come in and audition. And Judge said there were some really good Beavises that made me laugh, but nobody could do Butthead. And I think it's because... Butthead was always a 30 to 60 year old man doing a deeper voice. And I don't think an actual teenager could do Butthead in the way that Judge has done Butthead for the past 30 years.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Hey, baby. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard on my high pitched voice. Yeah.
So, that didn't come into being. The casting sessions did not go well. I think he was just humoring Paramount, you know, like you really want to do live action. Let's see if people can do this.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's hard.
I think that's it'd be a smart move on his part to just say, like, sure, let's give it a try. And then after, you know, it'd be frustrating to waste, say, months of your life or at least weeks on doing a thing you don't want to do and figure won't work. And then once it doesn't work, you're like, okay, cool. Now can we just do the thing I wanted to do in the first place, please?
Exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And we know from our Lou Morton interview that Judge worked on this script with both Ian and Guy Maxtone Graham, the fabulous brothers, one of which is very tall. I'm sure Guy is probably pretty tall, too.
Boy, I wonder how tall he is. Yeah, we, you listeners, if you haven't heard our episode of Talking Simpsons with Mike Mitchell, I loved hearing his story that in a room... when he worked on The Simpsons, being in a room with Conan O'Brien and Ian Maxtone Graham both just like mocking him as fellow New Englanders and just these giants towering over him and making fun of him.
We know Ian Maxtone Graham as the very tall man from 22 short films about Springfield. And also he worked for The Simpsons for like 16 years.
Yeah. For a while, he was the most hated guy who had worked on The Simpsons and the dude you'd blame for not being good, which, I don't know, maybe that was too mean, though. I think... he's better fit for things that aren't The Simpsons. I think, I don't know. I do think he's a funny writer.
He's a good joke writer. So obviously we didn't get this movie, and I hope we never do. But this script was partially adapted into Do the Universe. So this is from our Lou Morton interview, but over the 2020 holiday season, Lou Morton essentially just reworked the script into a Do the Universe, and he was hoping it wouldn't work out because he's like, this is going to be a lot of work if we can actually figure it out. But he figured it out.
Yeah, no, that sounded so cool, like that he's just sitting at home over the holiday break, jamming out on his keyboard, and as he's writing, like, going like, oh man, this does work. Oh no, it's coming together.
We have to make it. So yeah, and you know, of course, I'll say it again, listen to the Lou Morton interview, but he's super qualified. He was never a Beavis and Butthead writer, but he worked with a judge on Silicon Valley. He wrote for Veep, of course, Futurama, News Radio, a ton of stuff.
Yeah, he's feels like a dude who should have written on Beavis and Butthead in 95, but he was working on other things and couldn't have written for it. But yeah, and I think, too, you get the feel that him and Judge really got a good affinity for each other and their taste working on Silicon Valley, like when
I think
he worked
so.
On that. Yeah.
Despite the fact that everyone on that show is canceled now,
I
still need to watch it.
Or Gigantic.
Yeah.
As in gotten huge muscles.
The good thing is I don't really know who any of them are except for Kumail Nanjiani. So is that the canceled one? I can't tell.
No.
Go into it. No. That's me looking at all the different white guys and saying, okay. Is he canceled?
I can tell you the TJ Middleditch. TJ, I'm putting them
TJ
together.
TJ Middleditch.
TJ Miller, extra canceled, and Thomas Middleditch, I'd say at least kind of canceled.
Yeah.
I don't see him working with the people who he used to work with on like podcasts. I was like, boy, the fact that he doesn't appear on these podcasts anymore tells me that there's more than just smoke. There's fire, but that hasn't hit the news yet. But,
I can merely see them as vessels for good joke writing. That's I'll look at them as.
Hey, look, I'll just allegedly. All these things I'm saying are alleged. I don't know.
There was a recent article. One of the female actors came out to say things about T.J. Miller and how the Silicon Valley working conditions were not good because of him and other people enabling him.
Ooh, that's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, sounds like everything's fine now. Beavis and Butthead.
Yes. It sounded like a great experience. Yeah. Nobody was harassed.
Yeah.
TJ Miller's got some real problems.
Oh my God, does he? Yeah,
is he related to Ezra Miller? We got to watch these Millers.
The Millers are, you know, the two of them should start a supervillain crime team.
This is so unrelated, but I remember listening to an episode of, this is the actual name of the podcast, the Grandma's Virginity Podcast. Mm-hmm. That was Justin Roiland's podcast before Rick and Morty. He had TJ Miller on. TJ Miller literally has like brain problems.
Oh, okay. I half remember
like
that
almost killed him.
Wow.
And that's not excuse his behavior, but it might explain it, you know.
Yeah, it might give some reasoning to it, boy. Yeah, he I'm sure he medicates it very well and not with just like drugs or alcohol.
Well, he's not going to be working for anyone anymore.
I think the last I saw him was he's now on the canceled comedian tours of like, you know, you do Rogan, you do whatever, like all that shit.
My last thing, you know, I've never actually seen anything he's ever been in my entire life.
Oh, T.J. Miller, really?
Absolutely nothing. And I looked it over. I'm like, have I ever watched a T.J. Miller movie? No.
So you haven't seen Ready Player One then?
No. Absolutely not. No.
And you haven't seen the Transformers movies, the live action ones.
No, absolutely not.
I'm trying to remember what else I've seen him in. But yeah, when he shows up and shit, I'm just like, I know funnier guys who do this thing. Like, I get that they said, we need a Jack Black minus 10 years. How about this guy? And I was like, why is it always got to be this fucking guy? Because Jonah Hill said no.
He's skinny now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they all get skinny, man. I'm happy for the guys who lose weight. Like Jonah Ray, he is very thin now.
I noticed. Yeah, I noticed.
He's doing good. I mean, he didn't become a large buff individual like Kumail. But
there's a happy medium, but as long as they're happy. So that's our Silicon Valley corner. I might watch it with gritted teeth.
As long as it's on HBO Max, who knows if it's going to go away.
No. Yeah. Let's talk about the people who worked on the movie. So yeah, the story is very straightforward. Who worked on the movie? Who wrote the movie? Lou Morton and Mike Judge. We know about them.
Yeah.
And you can listen to our Lou Morton interview. We also have Guy and Ian Maxtone-Graham. And so far, we've covered 9 episodes Ian Maxtone-Graham has written on The Simpsons. So He's well established within this network. But who is Guy?
Sounds another like a fake name to get a second check for old Ian.
It sounds like a fancy name to me. I'm Guy Maxtone Graham. Yeah.
Remember we did that in Jaws Wired Shut? They made up a fancy person who said like Maxtone Graham was one of the last names. It feels like they're making fun of these fancy lads who talk about their childhood tennis courts and like, oh, if only I could beat my mother at tennis once growing up.
We know they're real like upper crust New Yorkers. There's actually a joke about Ian Maxtone Graham in the Clerks cartoon where they show a photo of Studio 64, a drawn photo. There's a very tall man in line. It's based on a photo of Ian Maxtone Graham in line for Studio 54, this giant standing in line to get in.
And that was before he was like even connected comedy writer.
Just a freak.
And yet he went to Brown. Not Harvard like guys like Lou Morton did.
So yes, Guy Maxtone Graham, basically when you look him up, all you find is Ian Maxtone Graham. He is the younger brother of Ian Maxtone Graham. As I said earlier in the podcast, I think I did, Guy wrote for the early run of Beavis and Butthead on the MTV era of Beavis and Butthead. So he has experience with Beavis and Butthead. He also wrote most of the Beavis and Butthead Marvel comics, which were pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool. I bought those. Yeah, I remember those. Yeah, I liked Beavis and Butthead, but when the comics started, the covers went more into the gross zone.
Yeah.
And that did push me away as a nerdy comic reader.
Marvel was really leaning into the gross out kids stuff because there was like a Ren and Stimpy comic I was reading.
Now that
too.
One I read. Yeah. I did read that mainly because my inroad to it was Powder Toast Man Fights Spider-Man issue. And
of course that happened.
Of course, And it's a great comic written by the guy who would basically invent the Spider-Verse, Dan Slott. He got his start on the Ren and Stimpy comics, and then he would write for Spider-Man for like real Spider-Man, for Amazing Spider-Man for 15 years. And he came up with the big crossover event called Spider-Verse, and then that got turned into the hit film. So
I didn't know it all began with Powder Toast Man.
It does.
That's great. Yeah. My theory on Guy Maxtone Graham is that Ian was the brother to move to LA. Guy stayed in New York and did New York things because he wrote, but like pretty sporadically. And I was like, okay, what did he write? Well, he wrote a lot for Welcome Freshman, the early 90s Nick sitcom. I think that's because Nickelodeon was based in New York at the time, and I think still is, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, Nickelodeon, well,
just like MTV. I mean, that's why he wrote for Beavis and Butthead, because he was a writer in New York.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered this so many times of like, if you were a New York animator or writer for animation, you mainly worked at MTV, and eventually if your MTV job got big, you would then move to LA to work on probably a Cartoon Network thing. Though I do believe Nickelodeon's animation arm since Games Animation has always been, it still is based mainly in LA.
Right, right.
But I believe everything else is still New York out of the main stuff is out of Viacom in New York.
The business stuff, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, he wrote like very sporadically for just some strange things. I think he might do other stuff, and then if like a writing job comes his way, he'll take it, but he's not like a writer in LA actively looking for work and like being on sitcoms and stuff.
I mean, when you're the idle rich, you know, just to write when you feel like it.
He's got to polish his tennis racket, look over the grounds. The Maxtone Grahams are doing quite well for themselves. And of course, the movie animated by Titmouse, a studio that's new to Beavis and Butthead. I was going to say up front, how do we feel about how it looks?
I like it. I like it, but it does feel different from Rough Draft Korea. Like the characters, every character that's not Beavis and Butthead that is redesigned for this, they feel Titmouse style humans in the Beavis and Butthead world feel different than previous Beavis and Butthead characters.
I agree. Yeah. I think they did, this might sound like an insult, they did as good as they could have done, because this show and the way the characters are drawn feel really incompatible with the newer style of digital animation. Like,
you mean how everything looks like Rick and Morty?
Yes. Yeah. This looks better. Yeah. But the tweening or the flash style animation, whatever you want to call it, I think, and we'll talk more about that later. We have inside info, by the way. But I feel like Beavis and Butthead, at a certain level, these two characters are incompatible with that process, which is why everyone else around them was redesigned, because those characters work better with that process. Beavis and Butthead are tied to physical analog processes based on how they're drawn.
Yeah, and one, for such specifically designed characters, for it to now go to Titmouse, who hadn't worked on them before. I think they got into it very quickly, you know, and well for the what they were assigned to do. But there is a little, just a little bit of like, uncanny valley is not the right word, but of just, there is a different design sense to new characters than there are to the old legacy characters that they animate in. Yeah,
they, I think they do a good job of nailing like the backgrounds and, of course, Beavis and Butthead, they need to look a certain way. They can never change. They only have limited expressions and animation, so those need to be intact, and that works. I just feel that I miss every background character looking like a Mike Judge creation.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he can't draw all the background characters anymore. It's too bad. But
yeah, that's my only complaint. But learning how they had to make this movie and the series in such short time, I can respect they did the best job they could. And I think it's still very watchable. When this movie started, I was just like gritting my teeth and saying, please don't mess this up. Please don't mess this up. And they didn't mess it up.
Yeah, no, I definitely think they didn't mess it up. And they, I think too, it's crazy for Titmouse that they had to start with the movie and then work on the TV show because, you know, unlike with Do America, that was the Mike Judge team on Beavis and Butthead, who after years of doing the TV show, they're like, we've learned a lot. Let's put it in the movie. In this case, it's like, let's do the movie and then we'll learn how to do the TV show. That is not normally how it goes.
Yeah, it was a very big challenge, and we'll talk about it soon. We have inside info that's very, very interesting.
And also, I guess, like you said, with Lou Morton telling us that he wrote it all over the holidays, it's like, oh, so this was also lockdown, fully remote production too.
Yeah, in 2020. Let's talk about who directed the movie. John Rice and Albert Calleros. And we'll talk about these guys. John Rice, he knows Mike Judge's work very well because Rice was art director for the first two seasons of King of the Hill. And he was also a supervising director on the show for a chunk of the late 90s. And he even goes back to the pilot where he was a storyboard artist. So he and Judge go back like at least 25 years.
Boy, I didn't know, right? You know, I think of just Wes Archer in that position. I need to... Now I'll remember that John Rice is also like right, I would guess, right behind Wes Archer in defining the look and style of King of the Hill.
Yeah, I think he needed to offload some of the work because there's, I mean, King of the Hill had like 22 or 24 episode orders per season. So he was also supervising director of the 2011 reboot. That looks very good. Mm-hmm. It, more than qualified. He also directed on The Good Family, a show that I think we need to cover on What a Cartoon. Because when that show came out in like 2009, I was like, I was very much a like NPR style liberal. And I'm like, you're making fun of the wrong people. But now, now that I'm far to the left, I'm like, I want to see him dig into these Van Driessen types.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the DVD right over there.
There's a DVD.
I think it's on the top shelf by the King of the Hills, I think is where I put it.
Okay. I'm sure it's not great, but I think I was just annoyed by the premise, especially because we had just come off of like 8 years of George W. Bush.
I bet if we watched it, we would think like, oh, this is really funny. Like, this is some good stuff. But yeah, you're right. It came at the wrong time. And on top of that, this was before I could just like stream it easily. It was like, well, I'm going to make appointment viewing on ABC for a show that clearly ABC didn't even want once they got it.
But, yeah, ABC never wants animated primetime shows.
But conceptually, just it's like, oh, it totally made sense, the pitch of that show. King of the Hill is because like, what if Anderson got his own show, but you've changed it a bit? What if Van Driessen got his own show? That would be this. Yeah.
Are we going to get the buzz cut show? I'm still waiting.
I guess he would be. It'd be him or the principal then.
Yeah. The principal, I think, is dead at this point in the show.
He has to be now. I have to assume the principal's dead. But who knows? We, you know, if there was a new episode where the principal shows up, then we're wrong. But he's got to be dead.
I was surprised Mr. Anderson was still alive. But I think it's a big cheat because Judge just wants to do the voice again.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they make him quite old in that episode, in the one we've seen so far. But even then, it's like, he should be like 105.
He should not be upright.
No.
So, yeah, all these guys worked on The Simpsons, by the way. So he did as well, John Rice.
Of course.
Character designer at the very beginning of season 2. was on storyboards by season four, so he designed a ton of characters. Wow, there's probably like a lot of famous characters introduced in those seasons that he created.
Man, I'd love to talk to this guy just to ask him, like, okay, which is your character? Who did you design?
I always love knowing, like, who drew Moe? Who drew Flanders? Mm-hmm. Fun fact about John Rice, he is the co-director of The Simpsons Ride with Mike B. Anderson.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that. Oh, that's really cool.
Albert Calleros never worked on the Judge thing before this, but he started as a background designer at Klasky Chupo and basically held the same role on a lot of series. So he's used to drawing a lot of weird, ugly stuff. Mm. And by the way, I love Klasky Chupo's backgrounds. So Rugrats, Duckman, All Real Monsters, and Wild Thornberries. Throughout the back half of the 90s, he's working on all of those drawing twisted, skewed Klasky Chupo backgrounds.
Man, you know, now I have another newfound respect for Klasky Chupo because in our other September interview with Susie Dietert, hearing her talk about how Klasky Chupo had the best parties.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Gabor Chupo sounded like he was a cool guy who liked to party. That sounds fun, you know? That
sounds
good.
I think there's a place in the world for a Klasky Chupo comeback. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. I mean, there was too much of it.
Yeah.
But I respect their art style, and I'm sick of everything looking the same now.
I mean, I guess there is new Rugrats on Paramount Plus we're not watching.
It's not the same.
Yeah, and sadly, Everett Peck's no longer with us, but we could still do Jason Alexander, still with us. We could still do some more Duckman.
Yes.
All you need is him. And Greg Berger, who is also still with us.
He's not that old. Take your knocks back, sir. Right. Nancy Travis.
Yes, look, I over knock sometimes out of fear. That's why I do.
Dweezil Zappa.
I feel like we're doing it
for all of them.
I feel like you should knock harder for Dweezil Zappa. I don't know.
He's doing fine.
Okay.
Albert Calleros also directed on a ton of shows. American Dad, The Cleveland Show, Border Town, Disenchantment, and Bless the Hearts. And I'm guessing because he was a director on Bless the Hearts, that's why he is a director on this, because that's also a Titmouse thing. And I mean, that's why Susie Dieter is working on this, because she was also on Bless the Heart. So it's probably just like, hey, do you want to work on Beavis and Buttheads coming into the studio? And they probably were like, yeah, it sounds cool.
Well, on Bless the Hearts, this goes back to the thing I said of like, oh, they didn't get a lot of practice. Bless the Hearts isn't not like a Beavis and Butthead. You know, it's not exactly the Mike Judge House style, but it is a grounded show set in middle America with Southern style folks in it. So
I resent it, and I'm sure it's probably perfectly watchable. You know, I've not seen a lot of those Fox shows that are right around the same time.
Yeah, that or the dog show.
Yeah, the dog show. Yeah,
or the Alaska show.
Oh, yeah, that one too. Yeah. I'm sure they're all fine.
Bob's Burgers Alaska as opposed to Bob's Burgers Central Park.
Oh, right. Yeah. Bob's Burgers goes to New York.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, this I resent it because they got permission from Judge to make Megalomart exist in the show's world, which means Bless the Hearts isn't the King of the Hill universe, and I don't like that.
You didn't
earn that.
Hey, if Judge is cool with it, then I guess so. But yeah, you're right. It makes it part of the extended universe.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Hey, I turn my TV on. What is it? I think see two crazy-ass cartoon sons of bitches staring on back at me. I said, what the hell is this? Learn, said, boy, don't you know? World's gone crazy over that there Beavis Butthead show. Talk about couch fishing. Now I can go for that. I've been going for frog baseball, but I'm inclined to use a cat. On property, I'm a stooges man like Larry Curly and Moe. But now and then I get a chuckle watching the Beavis Butthead show. Do-do-do-do-do.